Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Welcome to the 350th episode of GeekCast Radio. I am TFG and Mike, and today in this special interview episode, I welcome the co-creator of the GeekCast Radio Network, a 20-year podcast veteran, a voice actor, and now writer, plus my best friend in the world, it's Stephen C. Phillips. Yeah! Who now has his first book published, entitled Altered Audio, Podcasting Demystified, a guide for any and all podcasters with clear advice, real tools, and zero gatekeeping. Because as you know, folks, the goal has always been to unleash the podcasting geek in us all. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. See, the goal there was to basically fake not knowing you. And congrats on the release of the book. Any initial thoughts before we jump into the questions?
No, just waiting to be peppered with questions at this point.
Yes, I'm going to assault you now.
He's going to... Would you like to be a pepper too?
That's right. I'm a pepper. Don't you want to be a pepper too? That's right. It's an old Dr. Pepper joke. All right, so we got three sections here, folks. We're going to talk to Steve about his voice acting, his podcasting, and his writing. But got about 18 or so questions, maybe a couple more in the random section. You never know. Starting out with the voice acting, you say in the book that the original dream was to be a voice actor. All these years later, you have gotten to live that dream in several projects. What was your favorite part about the voice acting process that you went through?
So when I first got started, it was on the Transformers Headmasters fan dub. And I had a piece of crap LabTech desktop mouse, or not mouse, microphone. And it was one of those $9 microphones, you know, those ones that plug into the microphone port.
Yep.
And they just sound like crap. And then if you had like a phone call, they would have like the weird back feed. And then if you hit anything and had a weird back feed or a buzz, or it sounded distant, not very clear, just sounded like trash. I learned how to do that. And I learned, cause I was like, I have no idea what to record these in. And, I was using like Windows Sound Recorder, cause that was my exposure to it at that point in time. And, the other guys and the stuff, they're like, we use Goldwave. And I'm like, what's that? I'm like, is that Soundwave just different? And they're like, no, it's Goldwave. And, it's essentially like, I don't even know if it still exists, but it's like a, at the time, oh, it does still exist. they do a lot of like audio editing. They have a video editor as well now, but, they have multi-track. They have, it's like $20 to buy. So it's not bad. And it works on all devices. Like you can get it on iOS, Windows, Mac, Linux, and Android now. I remember using it. It looks nothing like it looks now. It was very different. And I had no idea what I was doing in the software. Like I didn't. And it was so confusing. There were so many different settings, so many different things you could do. And I didn't know anything. And I was recording for the voice of Scourge because I could do the voice of Scourge. And I was doing a voice match just like everybody else in the program and joined in on episode 3. And then every now and again, I actually still to this day still get, we've rebooted with a different set of people running it at one point, and I think they made it to episode 10 or 11 or something, and then it just kind of fizzled out. But it I get usually like one a year that gets recorded. And so even to this day, I still get to do some random characters in it. Like I've done Dive Bomb, I've done Superion, I've done, you know, some different voices. But that's still like the pinnacle of like awesome, because I still have the original video clips on a hard drive, and I'm like I got giddy when I saw my voice on the animation for the first time.
Nice. When you craft your voices, how do you go about doing it? What is your method? And I'm not talking about the impressions. I'm talking about your unique voices that you create.
So this kind of bleeds into both. So when I do the voices, I obviously watched a lot of television and animation as a kid. So I flip channels. I watched the one Saturday morning. I watched the Sunday stuff. I literally flipped between the five or six channels that had cartoons on Saturdays, and then the three that had them on Sundays. And then I watched weekday mornings and then weekday evenings. And I watched entirely too much. So I would play, like when I played with like my action figures and my Lego figures that I'd created to mimic the ones that I couldn't afford to buy, because I had a bazillion Lego, which, by the way, look nothing like the stuff that comes out nowadays that's pre-articulated and transforms properly.
Oh, I know, right?
Definitely imagination. Yeah. But I would try and replicate the voice, and sadly, a lot of them didn't come to fruition until I hit puberty when my voice deepened and I was able to actually hit the voice. But a lot of the squeakier voices were a lot easier to do, because obviously voices are different and they change over the years. And so I started out doing like Meatwad and, you know, trying my hand at Soundwave, Starscream, Megatron, Beast Megatron, Waspinator, Gollum. Those were a lot of my, and Kermit the Frog, those were a lot of my foundational ones. And then I kind of learned how I could merge other voices to create different voices. And so I have some original voices. Like when I have congestion, I can do Morgan Freeman pretty well, which, yeah, it's an impression, but it's still like a vocal intonation that I have to figure out. And even the impressions, I typically have to learn their speech patterns. Like I have to listen to them enough. I have to learn the speech pattern. I have to replicate it. I have to hit the right cadence at the right moment with the right speech pattern. I did that in my acting class. I played Casey Kasem, and then I did the Joker.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that. And then a lot of it, I just pick stuff up. Like, you know, when we interviewed the guys that did the Ninja Turtle podcast years ago, and then I come off mute and I'm like, oh, I can do Krang all of a sudden, you know. Yep. Just practice it, you know, 5 seconds off air, microphone muted, all of a sudden belt on, and then, you know, Saki, this is Krang. The devil is my new father. You know, and so, I mean, a lot of those voices just come out of just hearing them for years and learning what they say. But when I produced an audio drama for 3.5 years, I couldn't always do an impression.
Right. You had to create your own.
I did.
Yeah.
So one of the characters was kind of a play on Beast Megatron, but it wasn't 100% Beast Megatron. It was more lighthearted, more like goofy version of it. And so like I pitched the deep and dark, and, you know, and made him more, you know, conversational. You know, and well, you know, so I mean, I hit some of the same tones, but it was a lot lighter and a lot different. And then I had to do a talking parakeet, which I can't do right now just because my throat's a little raspy on it and dry. But I did a talking parakeet because they cast they had a written in role for a talking parakeet. And the director just looks at me and the writer and goes, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I said, well, lucky for you, I had an aunt who's still alive, but she had a bird when we went to visit in Florida. And she had a bird named Myron, and it would talk. It wasn't a parrot. It was like, it was some other kind of bird, but it could talk, like a, I don't know if it was a lovebird or something, but
yeah,
he would go, Myron, Myron, you know, and mm-hmm. go, hello, hello. And so like, I started doing that impression and they were like, there we go. It was supposed to be like a parakeet. And I'm like, well, parakeet don't really talk. They really don't.
Yeah.
And, but they wanted it to talk. They wanted to say just short things like, you know, never going to stop, never going to stop, you know, and things like that. So I just started speeding it up and doing it like higher pitched. And then there was a scene where I had to get vacuumed. Like the bird got vacuumed up by accident because the kid's supposed to be cleaning the cage. And they're like, okay, I really don't know what to do. So I said, well, I have this idea. And the director's like, let's see how it goes. Uh-huh. And of course, you know, Mary's recording for it too, because she played my wife in the program, because I cast her that way. And there's this scene where our imaginary son in the program, like the it's another kid, not our own, but yeah, plays our kid, and he goes, you know, vacuums him up, and the bird's going, you know, and something to that degree, and you know, and a lot more squeaking and squealing and things like that. And I did a quick, you know, number of that, and director's like, it's great, I need it longer. And so I'm like, and so I immediately like just chugged some water, gurgled it for a second, you know, yep. And then went at it and recorded a couple different takes of it. And he's like, throat hurt yet? And I was like, yep. And so I did that. And there was an instance where I had to play a Scottish character, which I was trying to do Scotty, but I was like, he's not off, like my impression of him and James Doohan's voice in Star Trek are not authentic Scottish
right.
accents. Like they're just not. Cause mine was an impression of James Doohan doing Scotty, you know, a Scottish accent in Star Trek. And I was just, this person that wrote it was like, I want to see you do the voice, Steve. And yeah, good luck. And I was like, gee, thanks. And we didn't have access to a Scottish actor. And they joked around like they were going to hire somebody off Fiverr for a hot minute there. And then push came to shove that day. And they're like, I got to get it done today. I don't have time to wait. What do you got? And me being the overly critical one, I watched a butt ton of YouTube videos to get the vocal pattern and the cadence and the speech pattern down. And I rewrote all of the dialogue for the Scottish character so that I could say it exactly how it needed to be said, like how they trim the words, how they, you know, the cadence of it, you know, and it looked like a mess. Like I couldn't even barely read it. And when I got down to it, I'm like, I have no idea what this is saying at this point. Like, cause I translated it in a sense. And so I got in the booth and I just started, you know, well, how do we got, you know, and just kind of added some of those lilts in there and things. And I'd watched a ton of them from voice dialect coaches on YouTube and other people that are Scottish that were watching, you know, like James Doohan, and then watching, I forget the other guy's name, that did Scotty in the reboot films. You know who I'm talking about. Anyways.
Yeah.
My brain is having a hard time remembering actors' names anymore, but you know who I'm talking about. And so anyways, they were like, his was not too bad. His was a different dialect, but it works. They're like, James Doohan is not Scottish. And then they were talking about Chris Pine doing a Scottish accent. Simon Pegg, yeah. And so they talked about Chris Pine doing a spot on Scottish accent in a film on Netflix. And man, I can't remember. It was The Outlaw King.
Oh, interesting.
And it was about Robert the Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was supposed to be playing the same character. In this script. And I watched this film 4 times and mimicked every time they said something so that I could get the cadence down and the voice down. Went in, recorded it. I could probably replicate it if I tried, but yeah, it's very difficult. And then I created another character like Ranger Bob, which was a take on Patrick Warburton doing his role from Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, nice.
Kronk. The Kuzco that Kuzco watched, you know, and
yep.
Squeaky, squeaky, squeak, squeaky, squeaky, squeak, you know. And so I did this weird thing with my throat the day of. Like, we were doing a live action version of whatever this was, and the character had never been seen before, never been heard before, like, never been in anything. And they're like, so here's the catch. You have to be the Ranger character, but you have to do a voice or something, and it's for 12 hours.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I got the voice figured out when I was driving to work at 7:30 in the morning. Same person that wrote the Scottish thing wrote this. Mm-hmm. I knew I was screwed. So they had the best intentions, but still. So anyways, I went in and I was like, this is what I got. And they were like, ooh, like, you know, like that moment where you hear David Kay talk about, you know, the voice, the control room, you know, all of them looking around like,
yep,
you know, dinosaurs looking at each other like, ooh, that's good, you know.
And, yep.
Or Camille, yeah, whatever. And so anyways, I did the voice, and I later figured out a better way of doing it without having to cause the throat strain that I was doing before. But I don't even joke, I got this voice figured out. I could not get out of the voice for 12 hours because I tried at one point during lunch to talk normal, and I lost the voice.
I still had
like 6 hours left to shoot, and I was like, all right, I gotta go outside for a few minutes, I gotta go get this thing back. And I listened to my recording that I sent earlier in the morning, and I'm like, how did I do this again? And so now this is the voice of Ranger Bob, so he kind of talks like this when he's talking, and you know, the squirrelies, and yeah. So I kind of evolved it from Patrick Warburton to more my own thing. And, you know, he's like,
oh, affirmative.
You know, kind of like he's like some weird, goofy military guy, but he's actually a park ranger. And then there's literally like a scene in the show that he talks like a squirrel. Or doesn't talk like a squirrel, but he's like,
I gotta go find my nature friends and see what the squirrels are doing, you know, or something like that.
And there was a whole mini series with him doing like nature nuggets for kids or whatever. And like, I came up with the premise, and then I was like, okay, now I gotta do the voice through all of them.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Switching over to podcasting. This one is more of a diatribe than anything else, but in the book you chronicle your podcasting journey, so we want readers to be able to read it for themselves. But 20 years later, did you ever think you'd have a network with 20 or more podcast shows that equal over 4,000 episodes covering many different geeky topics, of which The numbers are futzy with me on this, but 85% you're a voice on.
Sounds about right. No, I didn't think I would still be doing this, to be honest. not to mention the fact that starting off with TF Wire and doing, you know, 15 war story episodes, doing, you know, episode of Play On, doing an episode of TF Wire proper, and then doing all things Transformers and brainstorming all these other shows, getting to collaborate with like Twig and TF Anonymous and so many other different, you know, What's on Joe Mind and all these other programs that I'm sure I'm forgetting quite a few at this point. But no, I didn't see myself doing as many. Like I've probably done more podcasts than what I can remember at this point, including like, you know, the kids podcast that I produced. Like I did a number of those and I wrote a number of those. And those are dramatizations, and so those are different. I did some for my kids' school spirit day for years, and now, weirdly enough, I've been going around, and I don't know if this cuts into another question, because I have no frame of reference here. you devil. I, weirdly enough, have been getting asked more and more to speak and present on podcasting more locally than anything else. But I do have another, like I actually have a, like almost a webinar live stream type thing.
Awesome.
Coming at the end of September, actually for a bigger organization. So, than just a local thing, which don't get me wrong. I love doing the local thing and I love talking to the kids as long as they're receptive. But that's, I'm super geeked for that. Plus, I like the community and the community doesn't cost me anything to be in. I'm writing an article right now about podcast associations. So, that's going to be a fun one. I'm sure I'm going to burn some bridges by accident, but, I have some strong words to say on that. But anyways, yeah, it's definitely been interesting, and I've always dreamed of writing a book. So this is something cool, like getting to design it, getting to see it in print form. I have multiple copies of my own book sitting around. Mm-hmm. I have one in my display cabinet now. I have one, which that's the Barnes & Noble one, which I'm like, okay, that one's my other proof copy that's in pristine condition. My Amazon versions is not for resale. Both my boys have read through, or Ian's still reading through it. he loves the anecdotes. Like he got bored. He got bored when the anecdotes ran out. Because like he got stalled on chapter 3, and then he's just kind of like, I'll get back to it soon. He's like, because he was asking me all kinds of questions when he was going through like the intro and the prologue, you know, the prologue, yeah, and the, you know, chapter 1, chapter 2, and so it was interesting going through that. But yeah, I would have never seen doing as many podcasts as I've done, and writing a book or getting to teach about it, which oddly enough I enjoy, even though I'm not like this award-winning podcaster or you know, somebody that's getting asked to these big events or paying for these big podcast associations or you know, just because I haven't done those particular things doesn't mean I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
It's more so I don't have the time or the funds to do what some of these people are, you know, getting on the road running with. Yeah. And it's because, and again, that's why Clear Advice, Real Tools, and Zero Gatekeeping. That's, I'm not trying to like, I'm not trying to lie to people in the book and go, oh, if you buy my book, you'll make money. You'll be a big time podcaster. It's like, no, it's like, it's work. These are the tools that I've seen. These are the evolutions of things. These are the places to find what you need without having to do like a bazillion Google searches and try and find what actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of my premise for this was like, I want to help people figure out like, this is easy street, like skim through, find what you're looking for and not deal with like, cause honestly, you don't need the gear. It doesn't matter. Like, I mean, you can record on your phone nowadays. Like I've done it.
Yeah.
I've recorded, you know, conversing with you and Kai on Discord and uh-huh. not even had a microphone hooked up and it sounded just fine.
Yeah.
So it's, technology has evolved. Things have gotten better. Like it's no longer the, you know, the Cracker Jack box microphones of the lab tech days, which is why they're gone. The Logitech's mics sucked until they bought Yeti. And now they've kind of bastardized those too. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's kind of that's why I'm a huge proponent for indie podcaster, not corporate podcaster.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So after the recording of an episode of, say, All Things Transformers or Altered Geek, what is your editing process like? Do you edit it immediately? Do you edit it the next, whenever you have the time to? How much time are you putting in these days on the editing versus the old days?
So the old days, I will definitely say I put a lot more time. But it was also different. So back in the old days, we either recorded through Skype.
Yep.
Originally, we both recorded on Audacity.
Yep.
And then we had to sync up the files. And sometimes Audacity didn't play well.
No.
With the stream. And so we would have to chop and cut. And yep. And Audacity did not have multi-track back then.
Nope.
So it was not fun. You could easily screw something up, which is why I like the one Beverly Hills Cop episode with or Die Hard with Dodd or Mike Birdman. Yeah. That's why that particular episode was like whatever was wrong with it, like super slow or non-existent audio. And then granted, listening back to that, because I re-listened to M-Wire 200 just because I'm planning the revival.
Yep.
And I was listening to it and I was like, you know, listening back to this, I know what happened.
Oh, no.
I literally know what happened, but I didn't know what I didn't know back then. And so It was how it imported, but two, it was a setting in Audacity that neutered the file more or less. And so, but I mean, like, and then looking back at like, you know, our first interview with David Kay, where we had the buzzing.
Yep.
I could run that through an AI filter now and clean it up completely.
Yeah.
Like easily. But I also learned how almost like 8 years later, how to use the spectrographic cleanup and clean the majority of it up anyway. So, I mean, there's with each, you know, amount of time that goes by, things evolve and get better. And, forgot where I was going with the question, but started going down a rabbit
hole. And time and things get better over time and new tools and,
yeah, I mean, I've just seen a lot of stuff change. My editing, though, getting back to the original question, back then it was a lot more tedious, a lot more time consuming. I had, you know, the intro, I had the outro, which the outros were fun and goofy for the time. You know,
you've just listened to a podcast on the Geekcast Radio Network.
You know,
you can follow us in the following ways. On Facebook, blah, blah, blah.
Like, you know, I was just...
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Until next time, unleash the geek in you.
It doesn't work nowadays, but it was funny back then.
Yeah.
Kind of a staple of that old era. and you know, the gamer tat, you know, gamer clans and that kind of stuff. But I spent a lot more time doing it then. And then when we started using Adobe Sound Booth, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds about right. It had its own
edition. Yeah.
It was Sound Booth before Edition. It had its own issues with things. And I can't remember. There were some goofiness things with that too. I can't quite remember all of it. I also had like a version that could run off of a flash drive at one point.
Damn.
Well, it was like a mobile version that I stumbled across, and I put it on because it didn't need to install. You could just run it right from the flash drive.
Right. Yeah.
And so I used that for years because it was easier when I was on the go, or like when I was out somewhere, or like when I worked at the dealership, I had a computer that I used in between, you know, work and things that I had going on, like my lunches. I would literally edit on lunch, or I would edit college classes, and I learned how to do all this stuff through that. And then eventually got Audition when they phased out Sound Booth, and Audition was better and had a lot more features and was just capable of a lot more audio formats, whereas Sound Booth wasn't. Like, I think it couldn't even run AAC files or something. Like, it was just WAV and MP3 and M4A or something, and that was it.
Yeah.
And so when I got Audition, like, I started building out. Like, now I have pre-built templates for, like, all things Transformers and the Cyber Dragon Ball and Altered Geek. And I leave like the spot for the voice promo. I have the spot for the intro. I have the spot for the outro. And I, of course, like the outro, I drag it depending on the length of the episode. But I have them all on individual tracks. I have them all with certain presets in Audition so that I don't have to finagle with it. And then I literally import from our Discord recordings.
Yeah,
the multi-track. So like I get your audio, my audio, and then I put them on different tracks, and then just make sure, like, I drag them to the beginning of the time frame, making sure that they line up 100%. And then I move them further down past the intro, or like where the transition starts happening.
Yeah.
And so then I kind of I skim it, because generally if we're recording an episode, I can tell if it's going to need editing.
Yep.
I don't always take timestamps. Sometimes I should. But if I notice something going AWOL on it, I will look at the Discord recording, see where the timestamp is, make a mental note of it, you know, on a notepad, and seek it out once I've imported it into the multi-track. But for the most part, I listen to hear, like, I have the presets for Audition in there where it'll level it, it'll put a loudness filter, it'll tweak certain other things and kind of automate it. It's not AI, it's just presets, presets. So it'll boost things that need to be boosted and lower other things. And I have like 12 different presets depending on what it is. So like I have music one, I have like podcast ones, I have three different of those, and then I have other ones that I've used for audio drama stuff that are variations, and I've tweaked different parts of it. And then I kind of scrub through, and if I know that there's a bunch of ums or like sneezes or me clicking the mouse, because oftentimes I'm multitasking while I'm recording.
Yep.
Which I know that the click, 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 is super annoying to people, because I've gone back and actually listened to them, and I can tell where I'm paying attention and where I'm not. MWire 200.
Oh no.
I was listening to MWire 200, and I'm like, okay, I can, I totally, well, I didn't edit it. You did.
Yeah.
So I wasn't actively paying attention to what was going on. Like, I mean, I was paying attention to the conversation, but I think I was playing Star Trek Online.
Oh, I'm sure you were.
Because I was laid off and I was like, it was my, yeah. I think my first layoff and I was like, eh, whatever. Or maybe it was my second layoff. I don't know, but it was funny regardless. And I was listening to it. And I'm like, okay, I am annoying.
No, you're not.
No, okay, I meant so, the clicking.
Yeah, I understand. And I'm going to say something here, folks. And he knows better than this because I'm not trying to insult him, but oh my God, I want $5 for every I have to cut.
For me?
Yes. Per episode. And most people will say, oh, but you can leave that in. And I'm sitting here thinking, no, you can't. There's a perfectly good way to sit here and have a conversation and talk to someone.
So and not they do have software now. It's called Descript, and it will scan and create a transcript of the entire episode. And you can have it find the verbal crutches and remove them. And it tightens up the audio automatically.
How much does it cost? And is it?
I have no idea, but it's it is a. I know they have a free version, but I know that it uses part of the cloud to filter it and to clean it up. But it does do that. Like it will show you the transcript. You can go through and find all the ums or the uhs or the the other double word,
yeah,
verbal crutches, and it'll go through and it'll remove them all.
Nice.
And so they do have software out there. I'm trying out a new one from Daniel J. Lewis right now that I'm on the beta test for, and I can't say what the name of it is. Granted, I don't remember what the name of it is, but
it's fine.
It helps build chapters and it helps build like time for like more of like an outline of the episode itself.
Yeah, so basically, like, when I said, okay, well, this is the voice acting section, this is the podcasting section, and then up next will be the writing section.
Yeah, so, I mean, it'll do that, and the ID3 tags, and it'll do all of that, and it uses a little bit of AI, but a lot of the features are just, like, manual.
Yeah.
You dump your file in there, it automates, and it does a lot of the stuff. I'm actually working, and he's like, oh, I put it together in 3 weeks. And I'm like, okay, I know you used AI. So which everybody's doing that. I'm guilty of it. I've created a couple of, I've created a couple of the plugins for geekcastradio.com using AI.
Yeah.
Because one, I'm too cheap to pay somebody. To, you know, to more or less, it's if it's a subscription.
Yeah.
And I need a simple feature and I need it to work. Like it's not something that's like, oh, I'm going to have it generate me an SEO app, or I'm going to have it generate a podcasting plugin or a newsletter plugin, or, you know, pass keys, or, you know, something to that degree.
Yeah.
I'm not having it mess with, because there are better features out there. There's better things that are more maintained, paid more attention to. I don't pay attention to how WordPress functions. Like it's just not in my wheelhouse. So this particular one that I created, I ran it through AI, and because we used to use like a featured image plugin, and it was like, I forget what it was called, but it was for featured images, and it would allow you to quickly change them based on category, or you could click on it in the episode or the post list. And the one that was available was getting bigger and more bloated, because we've been using it. I don't know, 2012.
Yep.
Like way back when.
Oh yeah.
Because I, you know, we've changed websites, and I wanted something with like quick editing, and it got to be super bloated, and there were just more features, and it got ad heavy. And I was like, you know, every time they add all these ads, it's slowing down the website, but it's also a security risk.
Yep.
And so while yes, I do have certain things, you know, Jetpack on their newsletters, podcast importers from like Second Line, things for the theme. I don't like, I was going to have it generate our own comments plugin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through AI working it out with it, and it literally told me, out of the features you're looking to have, this particular one is the one you want. It's okay. Like, unless you want to sit here and develop a brand new one, which will take weeks to a month, you know, months.
Yeah.
This is what you want. And I was like, touche. I was like, you save me time. You save me effort.
Yeah.
If a better mousetrap works, you know, is there, right. I'll go with it. Anyways, I created the, you know, a featured image plugin, which is the only one that I have actively running right now. I have some others I'm playing around with and tweaking and messing with, but this one, I got all the features I wanted. There's no crazy dashboard, no crazy settings thing. It's just literally,
yeah,
it works.
And again, you're using the artificial intelligence as a tool.
That's... I'm using it as a tool to write the code. I'm telling it what I want. And then exactly. I'm telling it, and then I'm troubleshooting it. I'm testing it. I'm seeing if it works and does what I want. And then I'm working on the UI with it. And I'm developing a couple other ones. I'm actually working on an actual standalone program that I'm, because we're talking about editing, it reminded me. Mm-hmm. Where I wanted to automate all of these things, but where you can drop in the raw files, it will slap on the intro outro. It will, you know, things like that. Like, but I want it as a standalone program where one, you could plug it in with an API through AI if you so chose, for like transcripts or things like that. My main goal with it is, 90% of these different things people want easy. And then also 90% of the things out there are subscription. An indie podcaster does not have the money.
Nope.
I don't have the money. Like, I mean, I could pay for it. Yes. But if I paid for every service that had a subscription, it'd be like paying for cable television.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So I'm very, and as I've mentioned, I'm very indie podcaster. I'm not for the corporate people. I'm not for these people that are trying to sell a product. Like, yes, I'm trying to sell a product. My thing would be a one time.
Oh yeah.
I don't I want it to work. You know, it's like Levelator.
Yep.
That thing doesn't exist anymore. I mean, unless you have it, and it essentially would also have that type of thing built into it, but I'm not taking anybody's code. I'm not doing it. I mean, I don't know where the AI, you know, designs it. And I will say 60% of the time, the code don't work. Cause I've had that issue with even my WordPress plugin. But it's very much a trial and error thing. And it, you know, when I get something that works, I let it know. And then it tweaks it, troubleshoots it. And we, you know, we kind of build it collaboratively. And so my goal is to create this thing where it's like a one-time purchase and it's not like stupid expensive. Yeah. I mean, there'll be a kickback towards me on it, but I mean, it's nothing that's going to break the bank. It's like, it's well under the price of a video game.
Oh yeah. But again, just because it's a kickback towards you, you're obviously going to then put that back into the website or back into the production cost.
100%.
I mean, you know, you're not out. We're not out here making money, folks. Like we said earlier, like we've never been doing this to make buku bank of money or anything like that or whatever.
I mean, if we ever made money, great. Like if we ever got paid collectively, like, you know, but I mean, I'm also not under the flag of being like, oh, we got bought by Amazon. We're Wondery. We're also not going to have jobs. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, no. I mean, it's that kind of thing. Like I'm trying to, I don't love modern, like where modern podcasting is going, because you're getting all these like people trying to sell a product, all these hothead corporate people for these big corporations trying to sell their product and trying to rip people off. And it's like, dude, just, I mean, that's again, that's why the book, like, I just, it's not an expensive book. It's not, it gives you the keys to stuff. It's not a dummy's book where it's like eight times the size of my book and, and costs, you know, $30 or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, mine's a fraction of the cost, but it's, this literally will fit, you know, this is like a production handbook that you can carry with you, and it's lightweight, and so.
Absolutely. All right, back-to-back questions here. What is your favorite type of podcast episode to listen to? News, storytelling, or review show?
Storytelling. Depends what it is.
Okay, well, storytelling specifically to give you a, like, something like Podcast Approach or Origins or something like that, where a story is being told.
So they all kind of boil down to, am I interested in the topic and am I going to learn something?
Okay.
Because if I don't find value in the topic nature, or, I mean, the guest matters to some degree. Like, I will fully admit there are some Origins people I don't listen to their episodes because I don't know who they're.
Yeah, that's
and fine. Doesn't resonate. So
yeah,
it, there's one that it, there's also the familiarity. Like, do I know who this is? Do I know what this is for? Like, you know, I'll listen to a review show a lot more often, but I also do listen to some new shows. Like, there's some video shows on YouTube that, you know, I'll listen to that. I don't know if they have a podcast component, but I do listen to some of them, but I'll also go back and listen to some of our old stuff because I can't honestly remember what we said. Like, it's like, you know, the M-Wire 200. I didn't remember any of that. Like,
yeah,
but I also recorded it forever ago. And so it's very much just, one, I'm getting older, my memory is not as great as it once was, plus I'm dealing with different stress stuff in my life now that I didn't have then, and granted it's not as bad as back then, but still there's just more things occupying it. But
like, I was re-listening to, because I was sharing it with somebody on Discord, I was re-listening to the 4,000th episode of All Things Trend, the overall 4,000th episode of the network. And in that episode, I said, generally, if you tell me an episode number of any of our podcasts that I've been on, I can tell you what topic it is. Like, if you tell me Tooncast episode 1, well, that's the Nintendo Tunes. If you tell me Tooncast episode 10, that's He-Man and She-Ra. Like, I can do that kind of stuff, but I couldn't tell you what in the hell was said on that episode. I would have to actually go back and listen to it, kind of thing. But I don't know. I think for me, when it comes, so here we go. What is your, the opposite end of this question? What is your favorite type of podcast episode to produce? Same thing. News, storytelling, review show.
I think they all kind of tie into one at certain times.
Kind of, sometimes they do, but you know,
I like the news shows just to kind of keep up on stuff, and then I also like the review shows because, again, I can also do that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a fan of all of them to some degree. It just depends on the topic nature.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Two more questions in this category, then we get to the writing. What did you see as your biggest challenge in podcasting 20 years ago? And what do you see as your biggest challenges today in 2025?
20 years ago. Hand coding the website.
That's right.
I absolutely hated that. And I tell people, do you remember the day when you used to have to hand code your RSS feed? Well, I do. I remember doing the art. I remember doing the website. I remember having to manually update the website because it wouldn't automate. I remember having to manually do the RSS feeds. I remember having to, yeah, and edit, and then somehow find time to be like, oh, I'm going to produce more episodes. And somehow we recorded like 4 to 5 to 6 episodes a week, sometimes 3 a night.
Yep.
So
that's how we recorded 4 to 5 episodes a week. We would do 3 a night. That's how we got.
I don't know how I had the time for that. I mean, granted, different place in life, but
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it definitely was a different beast back then. Nowadays it's mostly just finding time to record.
Yeah.
I have all these ideas. I have all these shows I want to do. Like I want to do, I would love to get back to weekly Alter Geeks and you know, all things Transformers and have more regular cadence with the Cyber Dragon Ball. Cause like I have the scripts written for the next like 2 episodes of that. I'd like to get time to do Altered Trek or even edit the episode that I have. I've even toyed around with, I was going to bring back the Internet Pathfinder, but I was like, you know, that show's so far dead and removed. I'm better off doing a brand new show for Altered Audio.
Yep.
And kind of going from there. Yep. I also want to do the video show of MWire and see if I can actually pull off a video show.
Yeah, very cool.
And so, like, I have all these ideas and all these, like, projects I want to do and not enough time to do them.
Yes, well, when we get to the point of Altered Trek, we definitely have to record a preamble intro for that original episode we recorded, because that thing is sold at this point, and we're not re-recording that episode. We just need to slap an intro on it.
Which I will. Yeah. And one of these days I'll actually get that episode done. It's just, time.
No.
My goal is to get it done in the next couple of weeks because I finally have the Elkhars.
Oh, nice.
Segment.
Very cool.
I have the next episode's Elkhars done too.
Awesome.
I intentionally
did them together.
Those I recorded with, I used AI for those, but it was mostly because I was looking for like not the text, but like the vocals, because I was trying to get like the computer, you know, the library computer speech and
right. Yeah,
or as close to it as I can get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
absolutely. All right. Final question in this section for podcasting. What is one piece of podcasting advice you want to give the listeners that is not in the book?
It's like asking me if I remember what I put in the book at this point. But mostly just if something's exciting to you and something you feel like isn't being covered by somebody else, there is place for you. Like there's not, podcasting is not like, well, there's already 50,000 other shows doing the same thing. Well, how many of those are actually active, you know? And so it's, you know, do your research with it, but there's room for everybody. There really is. Like, and everybody has a different opinion. Everybody has a different perspective. Everybody has a different interest or level of interest of something, you know, and there's literally millions of avenues and in directions and perspectives that you could take it from. And I'm in this group with our podcast host, RSS.com, and the RSS space. And I'm literally seeing different things that I was like, oh, I didn't even think of that angle. That's a great idea. I didn't think about that, you know, cause it's like, it just didn't occur to me because we've always kind of done our status quo and how we've done things. And we've taken different angles and evolved them, but it's still different because we didn't think of it like these people did.
Yeah.
There are some things we were groundbreaking in doing before other people took it on.
like the Beast Wars podcast or, you know, a lot of the review content.
Yeah.
That's why we were big until like close to 2016 when it kind of the bubble burst and everybody got in. And then it got big again during COVID.
Yeah.
And then that bubble burst again because a lot of people that got involved with it jumped off after.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because everybody was at home and everybody didn't have anything to do. And everybody found podcasting and was like, oh, my God, we can just sit at home and talk to each other. Well, no shit, Sherlock.
All right. Well, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Time to get into the writing. So just to give a little preamble here, folks, we know this interview is all about the Steve, but background here on me, I've been writing for 31 years. I was 14 years old when I first started writing back in 1994. Many different things. I considered myself a writer before a podcaster, and now I'm obviously a podcaster and a writer. And I'm saying all this in order to ask you, Steve, had you ever had the writing bug? Were you a voracious reader as a kid? Because that's what got me into wanting to be a writer. I read a lot of books as a kid in the 80s. So what got you into the whole writing thing?
So in the 90s, I used to read a crap load of books. Mm-hmm. I burned through books like no other. My mom took me to used bookstores. I had a couple of shelves. We had kids' books galore, like in our bedroom with a bookcase my dad built, and it was pretty hefty. I mean, it was probably about 4 foot. It was probably like 4 foot wide by like 5 foot tall, full of books that we had. They were all, you know, your classics or your Disney or your, you know, various stuff that you'd get from the Scholastic or the book fair or things like that. And my mom has some of that stuff still. And my brother has the rest of it. And I got some of the books. And so I had, you know, Power Rangers, G.I. Joe. I had a buttload of comic books that were coming. I loved Star Trek back then and read all of the, pretty much any book that had to do with Kirk or the books written by William Shatner for Star Trek, I had. And I read them all. And they were, you know, like 300 and 400 page books. And I would take them to school. I'd read them. So I had a huge vocabulary, at least while writing. Vocally, mm-hmm. I don't speak as intelligently as I write, and there's oftentimes I write a word down. I have no idea what it means, but I know it fits in the sentence, and I know it's the right word. I just, you know, I can't define it or know what it is, like just right. From, but it's somewhere in my brain where it's like, no, this is right. I'm telling you, and I'll look it up, and I'm usually like 99% of the time it fits, but. No, I used to read a ton of those books. I used to go to the bookstore. I used to get comics. I used to watch, like I said, a crap ton of animation and in film and television series, and had all these different storylines floating around in my brain. I'd play with the action figures and the Lego, and I'd build my own scenarios and my own storylines. Then I started writing my own and recording them on video, which. The timing of this is so ironic. I was digging through my desk looking for something the other day. I can't remember what. And I found these old home videos that my brother had transferred from VHS to DVD.
Nice.
And like we have like our Christmas one from like 89 to 96. And then we have like a general one, which was like, I don't even know what's on it from 89 to 91, just random stuff with like one of those old Sylvania
yep.
camcorders that are
yep.
huge. And then there's another one that says Steve's Home Videos, which is from 94 to 97, which butts right up against time of Star Trek Generations coming out and my parents getting a divorce, since we had the basement converted into a makeshift Enterprise bridge.
Oh, wow.
So we put masking tape on the floor for the transporter. We had, you know, a pool. We had a air hockey table. We had a TV, which, and then we had a computer system, which I had the red alert sound recorded from the TV. And then I had created my own graphics for the red alert on the screen. And we had a computer chair that looked like the Enterprise A's computer, you know, the captain's chair. Of course, my brother's got the crappy chairs and I got the nice one. Just nature of the beast, and you know, dressed in the stuff, and had all these weird storylines going on. And then there's other ones where I know I'm recording in front of a like stories that I wrote on paper or a typewriter or word processor that I would read in front of the camera. And yeah, it'll be interesting to go back through that, because I've, like I said, I have no idea what's on it, but it'll be fun.
Very cool. Very cool. How would you define your writing style for Altered Audio and beyond this first book?
Very conversational, very kind of anecdote, very, I used a lot of plain English and, you know, in some regards, some metaphors and spelling it out for people. More or less, I'm being very frank with people, very open. Like it's like, you know, you've got a voice.
Use it.
You know. Here comes, you know, the part most creators dread. You know, where most of the magic happens post production.
Like, that's right. Yeah.
You know, it isn't just about cleanup. You know, it's you know, a lot of mindset stuff. It's a lot of like reframing how you're thinking about things, and you know, it's kind of showing that, you know, a lot of the content is fly by the seat of your pants, see what works, pivot.
Yep.
Because I mean, I even name drop, you know, ATTF, Alter Geek, M-Wire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even I even touch on like burnout.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's like, and why you came back, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the podcast feed quieted, you know, life got loud, mic sat still until listeners spoke up, you know, miss your voice, is all things Transformers coming back. Your show helped me through a rough patch, you know. I was like, I didn't relaunch for the metrics. I did it for the, you know, the connection,
that's right.
The conversation, you know.
And we've never done this for the metrics. Never.
No, I mean, I don't give a rip. Like, if people love it and listen to it, you know, the metrics show that it's resonating, great.
Yeah.
I'm still going to record an episode.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you can't evolve or, you know, get better with your craft or, you know, it's just making sure that what you're putting out there is better or resonating or giving somebody something entertaining to listen to and, yep, you know, educational, giving them a piece that makes them a part of the conversation. That's why I started podcasting. It's because I enjoy the conversation. I enjoy geeking out with other people. It's why I kind of wanted to do this in the first place. Plus, I've always wanted to be on radio.
Yep.
Now that I've worked in marketing, I realize I don't want to work in radio.
No. Well, I mean, podcasting has always been the new radio for me.
It is. I well, that's what I mean. Like, I'll do podcasting because I can't get fired from that.
Because we run the show.
Exactly. So yeah. I mean, it's that's kind of where I'm going with that.
Yeah, exactly. How did AA begin? What was the initial outlook at it?
The idea for it?
Yeah.
It started because, honestly, it was in the RSS space for our podcast hosting company.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting asked some of the same questions over and over. And then I had people in real life asking me that.
Okay.
A lot of stuff. Like, and then I've been going to a lot of stuff speaking publicly. And I'm like, you know,
I've been writing a lot of articles. I've been making a lot of posts. I've been dropping a lot of little nuggets of information. I should probably put this in one place.
Yep. There you go.
And so I was like, I need to put this all together. And when I started writing it, a lot of it was, I had a lot of redundancies in places. Like I had chapters going and there were some redundancies between chapters. And I was like, I did use some AI, but it was mostly layout.
Yeah.
And I was like, where am I repeating this? And where can I, you know, where can I make it more concise? Or like, can I merge this with this and have it still make sense? Cause like, I was trying to wrap my head around, I'm like, both are great information. However, don't need to re say the same thing in two chapters.
Yep.
And so I was able to, like, it was like telling me how I could reframe it. And I was like, okay, so I can put it here and I can do this with it. And I can, you know, so I was able to make it cohesive on my own, and it was great being able to throw a lot of that in there. And like a lot of it was just kind of making sure I had a place to put it, because like I've forgotten more than I'll remember, right, on podcasting. And like, yeah, I was taking like articles I wrote from years ago and on podcasting and on audio editing in general, because I've done both sides of it. Like I have a media degree, and then I have a slideshow that I was using for my speaking engagements, and a lot of that's in here. Like, and then a lot of the resources, a lot of the different types of stuff. Like I was just honestly trying to put it all in one spot, because again, I don't remember stuff very well.
Yeah. Well, you kind of answered sort of the next two questions, but I'll say them anyway. After you had the kernel of the idea, how did you refine and polish it? And then what was the formatting process like?
Formatting was interesting because each platform has a different one. Amazon, Kindle Press, KDP Press, it has one style. Mm-hmm. And then Barnes & Noble Press has a different. Ingram Spark has a slightly different one. And then the Kindle, like the ebook,
yep,
you had to convert in a certain way. And every time I tried to do it one way, it kept throwing off the formatting. Funny enough, I was able to, because I built all this in a Word document. I started off in a Google Doc and it was just coming out weird. And so I was like, I need to do this in Word proper. And so I was formatting it, making sure it's spaced right, doing the page breaks. And then I had to learn that because I have the specialized font for the logo, for Altered Audio and the, you know, the cover page on the inside, I figured out how you embed fonts into the file, which I didn't know how to do before. And I had to Google it. And then building the table of contents was interesting. Cause I mean, it's got an automated thing and it goes by like the headlines and the headers, like H1, H2, H3, that kind of stuff. And then the cover, that was a colossal pain.
Oh, no.
Well, I designed I asked AI to create me a cover logo. This is not AI created.
Right.
But I did it because I was trying to narrow down what I was going for.
Right.
And so I was describing it and I was kind of doing it. And as you know, with AI, every time you ask it something or every time you refine one little piece somewhere and tell it to leave everything else the same, it does not. So I would have it tweak something and then it would screw something else up. And then I'd have it tweak something else and it would screw something else up. And at first I was going to cheat and just let AI just make the artwork. And then I started getting irritated And I'm like, this is not what I want. This is not what I want. And it showed me one good copy at one point with the overall like shape and design, but a lot of the colors were wrong or the fonts were wrong or the, but it gave me like the structure of how it should look.
Right.
And so I was able to put it all together. I actually think the waveform that's on it is the only thing that's AI generated.
Wow.
The neon microphone that's from the Geekcast Radio logo that I created for that. Altered Audio is just a different variation of the font of Altered Geek. Originally, I was going to use the Altered Geek font, but I was like, it doesn't quite fit. It just looks weird.
Yeah.
And then Podcasting Demystified, like it, I was going for the same, you know, font. Then I wanted a clean font, which I think it's Futura for the rest of it.
Nice.
And then I put the GCRN logo, and then the binder, the binding part of it was kind of strange. Like my name's centered, Podcasting Demystified's almost centered, and then the microphone is not centered on the binding, which whatever. It's a first edition. I'm sure I'll have another one later.
Yeah.
But, and then I had to figure out how to put the, about the author and, you know, leave room for the UPC code. Cause in the templates, it doesn't tell you where to put it.
Yeah.
They just insert it wherever. And I could have, you know, but what's funny is between my Barnes and Noble version and my Amazon version is the Barnes and Noble one came out better. Binding wise.
Wow. Like
on the covers. I had to do a slight tweak, but the Amazon one doesn't. The other thing I was kind of disappointed is Amazon does not take care of the book when they ship it.
Oh,
as well as Barnes and Noble. Barnes and Noble had this thing in a cardboard box.
Yep.
Like packed in there tight. It was not going to get bent no matter what you did to it. The Amazon or the Amazon one, my not for resale was in good condition before my son got a hold of it. But it seems to get the scratches and a little bit of the dings a little bit easier than the other one. And I've gotten since two more from Amazon because I'm going to be shopping those around locally just to see if I can get them in the store. But
right.
The process was different, but I had to use a third party website to convert the PDF of the thing for an EPUB file for the Kindle.
Mm.
Because the software that came with the Kindle was just a nightmare to deal with.
Ugh.
Like, cause you have to use their software if you want to convert it, or you can upload a finished file. And I was like, I'm not doing this. I sent him a finished file and it worked. So yeah, I learned different things through different publishers. Like I get more of a cut if it's direct from Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. Mm-hmm. If it's the higher priced version of the same book on Ingram Spark, which again, it publishes to both of those places. So, I mean, I could have just done it through Ingram Spark from the start. But the problem with it is I don't get much of a cut from the Ingram Spark version, which is funny.
That's weird.
So, yeah.
That's very weird. Well, you've talked about the formatting. You've talked about the self-publishing process and things like that and how easy or difficult it was. So how did you approach this knowing everything? Did you approach it knowing everything you wanted it to be? Or was it a project that changed over the time as you created it?
It slowly changed. I honestly wasn't sure how much was going to go into this. And every time I thought I was getting closer to being done, I would have a conversation with somebody in the RSS space. And then I was like, oh, another nugget. Oh, another nugget.
Damn it.
Because I would write out all these, like, these different things are, you know, articulating something. And like, I literally, crap you not, dude. I probably have another like 10 to 15, maybe even 20 pages worth of stuff saved in another document. To incorporate for a second edition of this book, which means the next one will probably come out, you know, next year or something. Like, I'm not going to release them this close together.
Coming August 2026.
Might even be sooner. It might be like May or June, but
you know what I mean.
But yeah, hello. But I'll probably have a second edition of the book. I'll probably tweak some of the covering. I'll probably tweak, you know, to more or less differentiate it from V1 to V2.
Yeah.
And I definitely have more stuff to add to it. I was like, well, and part of me was like, do I hold off on releasing and just put these in there, or do I, you know, what do I do? Like, what's the best method here? Like, do I just continue with my original plan and just save these for V2, or do I pump the brakes on it and put them in there? And I'm like, well, if I do that, then I'm probably going to be pushing it out another month. And then
I was like, for V2.
Yeah, I was like, honestly, there's going to be enough stuff that changes. I'm probably going to have to redo some of what's in this book now, because even one of the newsletters, that one of the podcast newsletters I dropped in here by Chris Peterson, Download. He just sent out an email today saying that he's done with his newsletter because he got picked up by another organization in podcasting.
Jesus, okay.
So like, literally, like, that information is outdated.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have other things I would put in here, like, you know, podcast conventions or podcast associations, audio dramas. Like, I mean, there's probably another like 20, 30 pages worth of stuff I could throw in here now, but it was stuff I forgot about. Honestly, like, I forgot about podcast conventions. I forgot about, you know, producing audio dramas. I forgot about, you know, it, which is funny because I worked in it for 3.5 years. And
exactly.
I think I was so focused on the indie aspect and the fact that, like, these are your different avenues. These are your different, you know, playgrounds.
Yep.
Like, I'm having a conversation, like, I'm doing another teaching engagement with, you know, fifth and sixth graders this week. And I'm doing one with, I'm having a conversation with a guy this week about, you know, podcasts and, like, the conversations about, like, podcast hosts, guests, and, you know, sponsors and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm having a conversation about that during my lunch tomorrow. So yeah, I mean, it's just lots of different doors have opened, one between the book, and two for the fact that I'm just very ingrained in the podcast sphere right now with helping people. Just no charge, no nothing, just pure stuff.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So, final question. What advice do you have for authors of this type of book?
Of podcasting or of?
Just like the tips and tricks and the way that you formatted your book, and just because this is not a novel. This is more of a guide. It's a
nonfiction, yeah, you know, guide.
So what would you say to authors of that type of book?
Don't make it difficult. Like, I mean, yeah, you can have like diagrams and different stuff in there. I wasn't going to go through all that extra to create like a dummies book. Because, like, I mean, if you want a dummies book, get a dummies book. Like, I'm not trying to be a dummies book.
Yeah.
I also don't like dummies books because it's information overload. It's a lot of times like over explaining something. It gives you the information, but it's honestly like I feel like it just kind of, a lot of these books are too much.
Yep.
And so, like, to me, it's just make it simple. Make it something you want to read.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, that's the easiest explanation I can give you.
Yep, absolutely. All right, folks, you've waited the whole interview. You've waited the whole episode for me to ask him this. Where's the audio version?
Yeah, I've had a few people ask me that one.
Oh, we've talked about this off air, and I've given him a couple of ideas, but after I've read the book, it's like, it's not that he doesn't want to do, and he'll say this himself, but it's not that he doesn't want to do the audio version. It's that it's more so after I've looked at the book, I see why he says it's not really the book itself is not translatable into audio. Basically, what I think he could do is take all of the anecdotes and all of the actual written sections of it, where he's talking about his experience, which is what I think you said you are planning on doing, is doing some sort of altered audio podcast version, right? Isn't that what you said?
Yeah, something? I mean, I was thinking about just doing a podcast and kind of covering specific topics.
Right. And my thought to you was, oh, you could basically do all of, you could do that podcast, edit all of that together, boom, audiobook version.
More or less.
So, yeah, so Altered Audio Podcasting Demystified by Stephen C. Phillips. Where can they get the book? How much is it? And all that good stuff.
So they can get it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. They can request it at their local bookstore or local library. They can order it because there's a stigma with Amazon.com that bookstores and libraries do not want to buy it from Amazon. Don't know why. I'm not getting into why, or because honestly don't know. Yeah. But they do like the fact when it's on BarnesandNoble.com or Ingram Spark, which I have it on both. So you can get it for the ebook for $9.99 on Amazon. You can get the direct print on demand, which honestly I think is more economical in today's age. It's like, why have a bunch of books sitting around when they're probably just going to shelf warm? Point in case, yep. I went to Barnes and Noble and I've seen 10 different editions of Microsoft Office for Dummies that are dating back to 2016.
Oh my God.
Like they're still sitting on the shelf, like 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. Oh my God. And they're all with faded yellow color. And my son was like, how do you know it was in the sun? And I says, well, this bookshelf must have been over there at some point. And he's like, how do you know? And I said, flip the book over. And it was like bleached yellow, like almost white, because it was sitting in the sun so long in Colorado sun. And the other side was pure yellow. For the Dummies book. So it's more economical. Anyway, you can get it on BarnesandNoble.com for and Amazon.com for $15.99. You can also, you know, there is a $17.99 version, which is the Ingram Spark publication.
Right.
On both platforms. But again, that one doesn't give me as big of a kickback. But if you want to pay $2 more, you know, great. But yeah, it's out on all those platforms, came out August 8th, and yeah.
Very cool, very cool. All right, folks. Before we let you go, remind the listeners where they can find you online and all that good stuff to interact with you on the interwebs.
Well, I'm still on the Twitters at SCP21. I will never call it X because it's a stupid name.
It's just a letter.
It's like, just it's a letter.
It's not even a name. It's a letter. Yeah.
It's lazy. I'm also on like Instagram
Blue Sky
Threads, like Steve Phillips VO. Yep. I'm currently trying to redo my website to also include, but my link tree at SCP-21 has links to literally everything. So
very cool. All right, folks, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Geekcast Radio. Wish you'll join us next time when we will be doing something. I don't know. I have no idea. So for now, I am TF2 and Mike with
Steve Megatron.
Thank you for listening. Until next time. Oh, yeah. And unleash the geek in you.
This is Kevin Conroy, and I am the goddamn Batman.
You've just heard a podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network. If you enjoyed this discussion, head over to geekcastradio.com to check out this episode's post for more insights and links. Interact with the show, feedback at geekcastradio.com. or interact with us on X at Geekcast Radio and on Facebook at Geekcast Radio Network. Don't forget to subscribe to the Geekcast Radio Network of podcasts on your favorite podcatcher. So until next time, unleash the geek in you.